Selling toys is not always child's play. Today, Toys R Us filed for bankruptcy protection. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Remember those rainbow-colored letters and all the goodies inside? Well, sadly, it's not happily ever after for Toys R Us, which hasn't turned a profit in years. Chris Beecham, chief analyst at IG Markets, says the company was the disruptor of its time.
It sort of really took over because it could offer these vast stores and then push down costs in this way and offer a greater range of choice to the consumer. So it did really dominate the market for quite a long time.
I mean, I remember absolutely looking forward to going in. You could buy bikes, you could buy dolls, you could buy anything. So what on earth happened?
Well, like so many retailers at the moment, Amazon and the internet happened. Arguably, you're seeing some squeeze on consumer spending around the globe at the moment. And so people hunting for those lower prices are turning to Amazon and other online stores where they can get those lower prices because the internet retailers don't have the pressure of these big physical locations that eat up funds that could be used otherwise to drive down prices.
What does this mean, though, for Toys R Us's global operations?
Well, I should think we'll see a trimming back of many of its locations, and indeed not just in the US but around the globe, but looking to close underperforming stores to cut those costs. If places that aren't selling, then they need to be trimmed from the overall, I think, space.
That's Chris Beecham. Let's do the numbers. Trouble in Toyland is spreading to Hasbro, and shares of Mattel were sliding ahead of the opening bell. Meanwhile, London's FTSE 100 rose 14 points, or 0.2%, and China's Hang Seng ended down 108 points, or 0.38%, as its central bank meets. Now, you probably know that China holds more than $1 trillion in American debt. Well, the People's Bank of China is considering opening up its capital markets to foreigners at that meeting today. Miranda Carr, a senior analyst with Haitong Bank, told me why it's considering the move.
What China's interested in is attracting foreign institutional investment. So this is investment into its capital markets, the bond market, the equity market. Previously, back in the 1990s, it was all about foreign direct investment, setting up factories and joint ventures and the car manufacturers. Then in the 2000s, you had export trade surplus going into China, whereas now both of those have become less important in terms of China's growth story. And what it wants now is to attract capital into its financial markets in order to support its government bond program and also the company's sort of equity.
Does that mean anything significant in terms of the US?
US financial institutions, whether it's been the banks or the rating agencies or the institutions, have been wanting to get into China for a long time. Opening up the financial markets will help liberalise, reform and potentially improve them. But it's also, if you think of the negotiations which are currently going on between the US and China in terms of trade and intellectual property, then if at the same moment that the US is throwing up barriers in terms of not allowing semiconductor investment or putting up tariffs on some of Chinese goods, and then China's at the same moment opening up its financial market, then this is going, well, why are you closing your markets when we're opening ours? So in terms of negotiation, it's quite a good tactic.
Miranda Carr. Our tour of Germany, Europe's largest economy, continues ahead of national elections this weekend. The BBC's Joe Miller takes us now to the former communist East and Dresden, struggling to compete with the capitalist might of the West.
The train that takes you from Berlin to Dresden also takes you on a journey back in time. Its cramped compartments with faded curtains and dull lamps have hardly changed since the 1980s. Like much of former East Germany, the Free State of Saxony, of which Dresden is the capital, lags behind the richer West, plagued by high unemployment and aging infrastructure. And while the local tech industry has helped the city recover some of its former economic power, there are few signs of this in the GDR-era Plattenbau social housing blocks, where locals such as 61-year-old Matthias Chaya feel left behind by politicians in Berlin.
I was born in Dresden, and I was working in the retail industry until something unfortunate happened. I hope that politicians will listen to us, the working class, retirees, unemployed people, who all have their struggles in Dresden. All we want is to be heard, to say that we are still here.
Dresden has certainly been making itself heard in recent years. On Monday nights, rallies by the anti-Islamic, anti-immigration movement Pegida attract some of the largest crowds in Germany, and support for the hard-right Alternative for Deutschland party has surged. But dissatisfaction with the status quo is also increasing engagement on the left. Kadja Kipping is the chair of the left-wing Die Linke party.
If you want a society where everybody is free from poverty, where those who have a middle income are in a better position, a society who taxes the rich, then you should vote for Die Linke.
Kadja Kipping's campaign event takes place in the shadow of some of Dresden's most recognisable landmarks, painstakingly rebuilt after being almost entirely destroyed in the Allied bombing raids. But while the architecture in this East German city has been restored to its former glory, the fabric of society is still in need of some repair. In Dresden, I'm the BBC's Joe Miller for Marketplace.
Finally, tiny Norway's oil fund topped $1 trillion this morning. That's nearly triple its GDP. The fund was set up to manage oil wealth for its citizens, and it now owns, on average, just over 1% of every company in the world. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.